years of you, except to say it isn't worth a damn. And the whole damn place goes crazy twice, and it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. By the boss thrown like these dizzy heights, we're busted in the blinding lights of closing time. And it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. But the boss don't like these dizzy heights. We're busted in the blinding light.
Busted in the blinding light.
Busted in the blinding light of closing time. Closing time. Oh, the women tear the blouses off, and the men they dance on the polka dots. It's closing.
Conservatives used to claim that liberal talk was doomed to fail in the marketplace of ideas. We do. And look at us now. Nova M is proud to report that not only are we surviving, but thriving. San Francisco, Seattle, Sacramento, South Florida, Sirius Satellite Radio, and our home city of Phoenix are already on the list of believers, and we've only just begun to grow. Freedom is on the march.
If by freedom, you mean us.
What can you do to help? The best thing is to join our Founders Club. Your $100 yearly subscription helps ensure that we'll reach our goal of bringing Nova M to everyone.
And that would be a very good thing.
Plus, it gives you total access to our podcast library.
And a chance to win $10,000.
Log on to NovaMRadio.com to find out more.
No purchase necessary. Must be 18 or older to enter and win. Official rules available at 824 East Washington in Phoenix, Arizona, or online at NovaMRadio.com.
Remember when liberal talk was doomed to fail?
Neither do we.
We are the Nova M Radio Network.
Talk.
Hello? Is anybody there? Hey, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Jesus, you go away on vacation for a lousy week, you come back and the rats have gotten into the equipment. Good evening, truth seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. I guess we're coming through now. Are we coming through now? Hello? Anybody? Somebody send me an email. Are we coming through okay? Oh, my goodness. Somebody sent me an email that had an expletive, and then it sounds like ISDN trouble. No, not ISDN. Just, I don't know, spooks. We had, I think what threw the program here at the beginning was the fact that we have a bulletin that just came in, and let me share it with you here. It comes from CNN and also, I think, Fox, MSNBC, and the Associated Press. Ted Haggard is still a heterosexual. All right. There we go. Man. Yeah, we were gone for a week. Went south and visited the kids and the grandkids and had a good time. Thanks to Jeff Farias and Aaron Freeman for sitting in for me last week. I do appreciate it. We were about 3 days into our little time off, and we got an email from one of our bosses that said we had mentioned Aaron Freeman on our website, but we had misspelled his name and spelled it Aaron Friedman. And that people who were checking him out were getting a website from some 12-year-old kid or something. I don't know how that possibly could have happened. We have a lot of ground to cover tonight, and we are going to be chatting as much as possible with the phone calls this evening. So stick around, all right? John Zarella, who works at CNN, an old friend who goes, we go back to the 80s. John Zarella has been the Miami bureau chief of CNN for a long time. And, of course, if you walked up to John and stopped him on the street and said, hey, how's Mike Malloy? He'd say, who? But we have known each other for a long time. He has a story at CNN.com about Jose Luis de Jesus Miranda. Have you heard about this guy? He has the number 666 tattooed on his arm, and he says he is God. He says he is the recent incarnation of Jesus. Now, I don't know what the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, one of the Bush family financiers, is going to say about that, because the Reverend Moon says he's Jesus. But anyway, we're going to have dueling Jesuses here. DeJesus and his believers have a church called the Creciendo en Gracia, which means growing in grace. He says he is divine. And that this church will soon be a major faith in the world. Now, DeJesus grew up in Puerto Rico, and he served stints in prison there for petty theft. And he says he was a heroin addict. And one night, DeJesus said he was asleep. And he started dreaming, and he was visited in a dream by angels. And the angels told him that he was Jesus. DeJesus says, "The prophets, they spoke about me. It took me time to learn that, but I am what they were expecting, what they had been expecting for 2,000 years. Now, why do I do stories like this? I don't know, because it's madness, I guess. The church that he began building 20 years ago in Miami resembles no other, according to CNN. Followers have protested Christian churches in Miami and Latin America, saying that, you know, they're not real. DeJesus preaches there is no devil and no sin. It probably makes it easy for him to get laid and you know, get money out of his parishioners. But his followers, he says, literally can do no wrong in God's eyes. And he says the church is the government of God on earth. Whew. He says he has a church-paid salary of $136,000 a year, but lives more lavishly than that. During an interview, he showed off a diamond-encrusted Rolex to a CNN crew. It said he has three, just like them. "I have three of these." He travels in an armored Lexus and BMWs, he says, for his safety. Now, what about that 666 tattoo on his arm? You know, that's the mark of the beast, the number of Satan. DeJesus says that 666 and the Antichrist are, like him, misunderstood. The Antichrist, DeJesus says, is not the devil. The Antichrist is the being who replaces Jesus on earth. DeJesus says Antichrist is the best person in the world. Antichrist means don't put your eyes on Jesus, because Jesus of Nazareth wasn't a Christian. Antichrist means not put your eyes on Jesus of Nazareth, put it on Jesus after the cross. Last night, Kathy and I went to see Pan's Labyrinth. Have you seen that yet? For some reason, when I saw the story tonight about this freak, it reminded me of that movie. Don't take your child to see Pan's Labyrinth. I guess you know that. It's not a child's movie. It's about fascism. Spanish Civil War fascism. And it is one weird movie. Our senior correspondent in Minnesota, Chris. What's that noise? Is that, wait, a break already? Christ, I just got back. Is everything working now? Can we take a break and come back and actually go on the air? Can we do that, you think? You think? Huh? You got a loose wire there. What does that plug in? I don't know either. We'll take a break and be back. True Seeker, stick around. This is, I have a feeling this is going to be a long, miserable program. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
All I want to do is satisfy my Lord and be the bestest Christian boy. In all the whole wide world, I'll be a cowboy.
I'll get this kid out of here, will you?
A cowboy. I'll work for Jesus all my days. And on the prairie or in the city, I'll help him round up all the strays.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Regarding 666, the mark of the beast, Bruce in New Jersey writes, "Hey Mike, I'm number 668, neighbor of the beast." people are sick. I swear. 668, number of the beast. All right, neighbor of the beast. Our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, sent me a little thing this morning, as he's wont to do every day. He says, George W. Bush answering a question from ABC's Martha Raddatz about whether there's a civil war. It'll stop, folks. It'll stop. All right, I'll tell you what. Why don't we just put a tape on and play a program from last week? You want to do that, since we can't seem to...
No one will know the difference.
No. Well, that's probably true. Jesus, we've forgotten how to run the buttons here.
I took some stupid pills while I was on vacation.
Anyway, Bush answering a question from ABC's Martha Raddatz about whether there's a civil war in Iraq. Now, you remember this interview. This was a week or so ago. He said, quote, "It's hard for me living in this beautiful White House to give you a firsthand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't." Now, that was his quote. I remember seeing that, and I thought, why bother? You know, I mean, this is another Bush quote, like, I'm the decider. Truth is, he's visited Iraq at least twice since the war began, most recently about 6-7 months ago. but he says, I haven't been there. Now, how did Chris in Minnesota want me to see how the Chicago Tribune and other news sources covers Bush's ass for him when he makes a statement like that? This is what it said in the Tribune. Asked about a recent National Intelligence Estimate reporting that some of the conflicts in Iraq amount to civil war, Bush avoided use of the term. Quote, "It's hard for me living in this beautiful White House to give you an assessment, firsthand assessment. I haven't been there," said Bush, who has visited Baghdad's Green Zone, headquarters for U.S. military and the Iraqi government, and the Baghdad airport, but has not traveled beyond that in Iraq. End quote. Why didn't the Tribune say, George W. Bush claims he hasn't been to Iraq, and we think he's been there twice? Now, Chris writes, oh, he's been to the Green Zone, but not beyond that. That's what he meant. Really, that's what he meant. Not that he hasn't been to Iraq. What he meant was he hasn't been beyond the wall. Yeah, we're telling you the truth. Why would you think we're lying about what he really meant? Now, my senior correspondent's assessment. Either George W. Bush is so far gone mentally that he can't remember where he's been, or for that matter, where he is from day to day or minute to minute, or George W. Bush is on a multitude of drugs that keep him from needing to worry about anything of consequence, or both the photo ops in Iraq were simply that, staged at a nearby base inside the United States, made up to look like it was indeed Iraq, complete with soldiers willing to play along for the betterment of Bush, or ordered to do so. There are no other explanations. None of this, well, he was in the Green Zone, but he wasn't beyond the Green Zone, and that's what he meant. We're sure that's what he meant, really honest. None of that crapola from the Tribune. None of that crapola that the Tribune is trying to whore around. It's either door number one, door number two, or door number three. Oh, my God. This is President's Day, right? There was no garbage pickup today and no mail. So usually that means it's a holiday. Al Newharth, you know who he is. He must be old. My God, he's a World War II veteran, is he? He's also a former chief of Gannett Newspapers and the founder of USA Today. And a year ago, in honor of President's Day, he stated that while he was often critical of Bush, he did not and probably would not ever, Bush wouldn't, crack Newharth's a list of the five worst presidents we've ever had. Now, he admits he's wrong. In his USA Today column today, he announces that Bush... last Friday, I should say, Bush has not only cracked the bottom five, he's now at the very bottom. Now, that's Newharth, who is a journalist. Consider that the different pose from David Broder in the Washington Post, who likes to style himself as a liberal, but really, the Washington Post is becoming another nest of these radical right-wingers, including David Broder. Broder in the Washington Post wrote on Friday... Quote, "It may seem perverse to suggest that at the very moment the House of Representatives is repudiating his policy in Iraq, President Bush is poised for a political comeback, but don't be astonished if that is the case, end quote. That's David Broder. Broder, I don't know what to tell you. What's the matter? You're not getting the plum assignments like Woodward is? Poor bastards. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Stick around. It'll be more than a minute. Stick around. I'm Mike Mulroy. This is Nova M. W's got a mission, W's got a plan, W's got a pistol, it's burning in his hand. Cause he's turned the world into one big Texas. What? Turn the world into one big Texas.
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Mulroy.
Me. 26 before the hour. What was that I heard right before we played the music to come back? The promo from Nova M. We haven't hit 5,000 yet. 5,000 charter members, or what do we call it? Founding member? We haven't hit 5,000 yet? Well, that's certainly a surprise. It's not a very good surprise, but that's, I figured when we came back we would have hit that 5,000 mark. Okay. McCain, do you see what John McCain is out there doing? He's in South Carolina today. Over the weekend, South Carolina, where the Whisper campaign, put together by Karl Rove and Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and who's the freak that runs the Christian college there? What's that Christian college in South Carolina, Kathy? I can't think of it either. During the 2000 campaign, after McCain won the Republican primary, with the help of a lot of Democrats in New Hampshire, a lot of Democrats crossed over. By the time they got to South Carolina, the evil Rove machine had cranked up. And it was in South Carolina that word got out that McCain's wife was a drug addict and his child was a Negro and he was insane. And so Bush won the South Carolina primary, and the rest, of course, up to the theft of the presidency on December 12th, 2000. The rest, as they say, is history. But McCain is back in South Carolina because, you know, this sorry old bastard is going to try to run for the Republican nomination. McCain has as much chance of making it as I do. But he's there, and he's saying all the things his mind totally has gone to mush. I swear to God, it's finally happened. I'm sorry, on the one hand, that he was tortured in North Vietnam. On the other hand, what are you going to do with somebody who's playing you shoot down, who's been bombing your cities and your towns and killing your civilians? I don't know. You might put him up against the wall and shoot him. But in McCain's case, they held him as a prisoner of war, drove him mad, and then released him. McCain obviously is he's not showing post-traumatic stress disorder. He's showing madness. So there he is in South Carolina saying the things he thinks these mouth-breathing Republicans in South Carolina want to hear. For example, he says, I do not support Roe versus Wade. It should be overturned. He said that to about 800 people in South Carolina. And what he's saying with that is McCain does not believe that a woman has a right to privacy. Now, let's be real. Let's call Roe v. Wade what it is. That Roe v. Wade never had a single thing to do directly with abortion. It didn't. What it had to do with is a woman's right to privacy, to make a decision about abortion if she chose to, without penalty of the law coming down and putting her in jail. So it's about privacy. So McCain is on the record now. He doesn't believe in a woman's right to privacy. I'm sure he believes in a man's right to privacy. Now, McCain also went on with the usual stump water garbage toilet spew. He said if he's elected, he would appoint judges who, quote, strictly interpret the Constitution of the United States and do not legislate from the bench, end quote. I would like to see the phrase legislate from the bench broken off of every single sentence that it now appears in and rammed up the nearest Republican's nose. I really, really would. I am so sick of seeing the phrase legislate from the bench. Aren't you? I know you are. Now, McCain also announced yesterday that he's been endorsed by former Oklahoma Governor Frank Keating. Oh, Jesus, that really makes a difference. And former Texas Senator Phil Graham, the guy who used to make a lot of money investing in a film company in California that made hardcore, naked, get-on-each-other-and-do-it sex movies. That Phil Graham, who's married to Wendy Graham, who, I don't know if she acted in the films, but by God, she was willing to spend the money made from their porn investment on furs and cars and what have you. So I would think that McCain would not be so quick to holler about Phil Graham endorsing him. He's a porn movie backer, South Carolinians, which probably doesn't mean anything to them anyway. Keating told this crowd of 800 mouth breathers in South Carolina that McCain is, quote, the only candidate who is a true blue Ronald Reagan conservative, end quote. A Ronald Reagan conservative. Now, what does that mean? Well, first of all, it's a union-busting freak. He's a Hollywood movie star who was half senile when he got to office. He supported terrorism in Central America. He was a liar, a smartass, a punk. Thrice divorced, didn't even know who his children were, never went to church. Why are they using Ronald Reagan in South Carolina? Why are they using Phil Graham? Oh, that's right. These are people who live in South Carolina. Never mind. I just answered my own question. Oh, and by the way, after all this nonsense on Saturday, on Sunday evening, last night, McCain was scheduled to attend a rally promoting an abstinence program. Now, how do you do that? How do you have a rally? I'm afraid to even think about it, much less say anything. I mean,
rah, rah, sis, boom, bah.
What do you say? Rah, rah, sis, boom, bah. We don't want any nah, nah, nah. I ain't going to touch it. I ain't going to look at it. I ain't going to think about it. Not until I am married. How do you have an abstinence rally? How do you do that? Would you get together with a bunch of horny 16-year-olds and what's this thing they do now where they marry their fathers? They have, what is that thing called, Kathy?
I was just going to bring that up. It's some kind of virginity promise ceremony where you go to the prom with your dad and he gives you a ring and you promise not to have sex.
But you promise your virginity to your father?
You pledge your virginity
pledge.
To your father.
Jesus,
and,
God.
In other words, you're sort
and
of...
And these are Christians, right?
You're giving over control of
no,
your,
don't say it.
Your maidenhood...
maidenhood.
To your father.
Well, thank God you said maidenhood. This is insane. It's getting insaner and insaner. And what did I read over the weekend? Or maybe it was while we were visiting the grandkids. I think it was in the St. Pete Times. How scientists, in just generally speaking, are becoming more and more nervous because fewer and fewer Americans are willing to reside in a logic or fact-based universe. They want to live somewhere where astrologers, nothing, you know, I don't care about astrologers. If you're an astrologer and you listen to this program, bless your heart. But where astrologers have as much credence as, say, oh, I don't know, astronomers, where spooks and things that go bump in the night and talking to people in the great beyond and all this magical, mystical horse hockey is becoming more and more prevalent. It's. I swear to God, it's like the beginning of the new Dark Ages, isn't it? What the hell is wrong? What is it that makes people turn away from science, and turn to this, first of all, to religious nonsense, but beyond that, to this supernatural horse crap. What's wrong, folks? Come on, tell Uncle Mike. God. So here's McCain. Last night, attending a rally promoting sexual abstinence. And this thing about teenage girls, Jesus, pledging their virginity to their daddies. Oh, think about that for a minute. I mean, how do you discuss that with your daughter? I've got four daughters. If any of them ever said to me, Daddy, I pledged my virginity to you, I think I would have kicked them out of the house and get out of here, you freak. What's wrong with you? You're pledging what? Bob Jones University. That's what I was trying to think of. Thanks, everybody, for telling me. I'm just drawing a blank. Bob Jones University. Anyway, now, McCain has been rebuked. That was always one of my favorite words when my grandmother used to take me to the Baptist church, rebuke. We rebuke you, Satan! You know, I used to think, God, what a weird word that is, rebuke. I used to think it was repuke when I was a little kid. And I thought, the worst thing you can do is puke. The worst thing beyond that you can do is repuke. So I thought they were saying, we rebuke you, Satan! I'm going, oh my God, that's horrifying! But here's James Dobson, recently rebuked McCain. And said, I'm not going to back his presidential bid. I won't. Because McCain has an opposition to a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. Now, McCain opposes same-sex marriage, but he says it should be regulated by the states. No. According to Dobson and these other freaks. By the way, have I mentioned tonight that Ted Haggard is still hetero? I did mention it? Okay, good. But because McCain... Oh, never mind. I don't know why I just keep going on and on about these fundamentalist dominionist freaks, but there's McCain turning himself into a 25-cent whore in South Carolina.
Remain in my life, whose love has been true. Jesus.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Sunny time. Just sent me a clip, an article from the Washington Post, Tuesday, August 24th, 1999, where McCain softened his stance on abortion. He says, certainly in the short term, and even in the long term, I would not support repeal of Roe v. Wade, which would then force X number of women in America to undergo illegal and dangerous operations. And on that Sunday, on CNN's Late Edition, McCain reiterated that he would not have an abortion litmus test for a running mate or Supreme Court nominees. He said, we all know, and it's obvious, that if we repeal Roe v. Wade tomorrow, thousands of young American women would be performing illegal and dangerous operations. Well, I don't know that the women would, but, maybe they would. Anyway, so McCain, like I say, I don't know why I focus on McCain, except for the fact that he just irritates me. That's all. He's a very irritating, unctuous, self-righteous jackass who just gets under my skin. He really does. And up until 2000, I used to think, okay, maybe he might make a good Republican candidate. Not that I would vote for him, but... but then the way he moused out, just turned tail and ran, I thought he was going to break his spine from carrying that heavy yellow streak around after the Bush operatives got on him in South Carolina. That's when I thought, okay, goodbye. Good night, John. Have a nice sleep. Wake me when it's over. This is from Kay in San Francisco. Let me share this with you. Dear Mike and Kathy, thank you for taking your vacation last week when I was on the road and unable to tune in. My road trip involved taking a group of high school students to Washington, D.C. While it was exciting for them, I had an overwhelming feeling of sadness and disgust during the entire week, which I struggled to keep to myself so as not to dampen their enthusiasm. Thursday was our Capitol Hill Day program. We met with our representative, Tom Lantos, and a staff member from Senator Dianne Feinstein's office. After that, we spent some time sitting in the House gallery watching the five-minute speeches on Iraq. The day before, I had heard Randy Rhodes report on a Republican strategy letter detailing how they wished to do anything but actually debate the Iraq escalation. Republicans were told that the debate must be about the global threat of the radical Islamic movement. And from what I saw, and that's with quotes around it, and what I saw, from what I saw on the House floor that day, they marched in lockstep with those orders. The most ridiculous moment came when a Republican representative from Florida approached the podium with an enormous photo of Osama bin Laden, which he proceeded to place on a stand behind him. He then launched into a speech tying the Iraq debacle to 9/11, attempting to whip up the fear of Americans ignorant of the fact that any terrorism in Iraq is of the Bush administration's own making. As you would say, Mike, to anyone with the sense God gave a sack of doorknobs, the faulty logic and outright lies were outrageous. I was left speechless, which is a good thing, because had I been able to utter a sound, it would have come out as a scream. This trip to Washington was different from any I had taken previously. In the past, being in the nation's capital gave me a sense of optimism and hope, but this time, all it did was depress me. And no, it was not due to the weather, because I've braved winters in Washington before. It was because of the sense that the progress this country had been making toward realizing the potential of those documents preserved in our national archives has taken a hard U-turn over these past 6 years and has set us back decades, if not centuries. It left me with the realization that if something drastic isn't done soon, our democracy may be beyond salvation. Now I am left with the challenge of continuing to teach American democracy as if it still exists. Just had to get that out. Sincerely yours, K. San Francisco. You know, it was the last line there that in her letter, I'm left with the challenge of continuing to teach American democracy as if it still exists. That line just really hit me too. How do you do that if you're teaching an American government class or whatever it's called now? When I was in high school, it was called, a thousand years ago, it was called American government. But how do you teach the founding principles of this country? How do you teach kids about the absolute necessity of habeas corpus, the thing that sets us apart in so many instances from torture regimes or from totalitarian regimes, and the fact that the Bush administration has decided that habeas corpus is just a joke? How do you let your student... What do you do if a student says to you in class, I hate to use a bad word, but did George Bush really call the Constitution that goddamn piece of paper? I mean, how do you respond to that? How do you teach American history, much less American government? But it's just, I don't know. I feel badly for school teachers. I have for a long time. The way they are battered around by local government, state government, school boards. Look at the situation in Kansas and state after state, where teachers are forced to do things that they know that is just wrong. What's the choice? Get out of the profession that they've studied and went to school to become credentialed, in which they become credentialed? You know, what are you supposed to do if you're a school teacher? What do you do if you're a science teacher and, you know, your kids want to talk about spooks and demons and goblins and man... Or tell you, you know, what do you do if you're a science teacher and you have students whose parents say, I don't want him teaching or her teaching the theory of evolution because it says in the Bible, yada, yada, yada. How do you handle that? I don't know. Gail Norton, who headed the Department of the Interior for the Bush's first term, used to be a lobbyist for the lead industry. And when we come back, there's a quick article I want to share with you here about the lead industry. And then we're going to move on to your phone calls, all right? All right, stick around. We've missed you. We really missed you. Oh, by the way, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. We'll talk when we get back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Regarding the, you know, the girls who pledged their virginity to their dads. Email here from Telford. What about the boys? Who do the boys pledge their virginity to? Oh, this is from Pamela in Tennessee. Who do the boys pledge their virginity? Well, come on, Pamela. Pamela in Tennessee. Boys don't pledge their virginity. Boys are supposed to go sow their wild oats. I don't know, to their moms. It's an interesting question. Do they have rallies where the boys put on a ring with their moms and pledge their virginity to their mothers? This is getting weird. By the way, Ted Haggard is still heterosexual. Just thought you might want to know that. Reverend Ted, soon to be a psychologist. All right, Gail Norton, who headed Bush's, this is just another in an endless list of impeachable offenses, criminal activities, thuggery, and proof positive beyond anybody's doubt, unless you're a Dominionist, that Bush may be the Antichrist. I bet he has 666 painted, tattooed on his butt. Did you hear, I can't say it on this program, but Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, one of the Israeli newspapers, has a book review out right now, a book written by an Israeli author about Ariel Sharon. And in the book, and it's at Haaretz's website. You can go read it right now if you want to. It talks about what Bush said he would do when he got to when he finally got his hands on Osama bin Laden. I can't even allude to it because, Anyway, it's been such a corrupt, criminal, cowardly, filthy administration. Gail Norton was just one example. Every time I hear that name, Gail Norton, I think of Ed Norton. They even looked alike. But Gail Norton, who used to be a lobbyist for the lead industry, you know, lead is good for you. It's good for your children. And then she went on to head the Department of the Interior. Was it Interior? Yeah, where, one of her duties was to make sure that lead levels in the environment were up to the level where it would cause everybody to get brain damage. I mean, they're really some evil sons of bitches who have worked for Bush. I swear to God. Which brings us to this story. In 2005... When the Bush administration scientists, I know that's an absolute oxymoron, but when they tested 60 soft vinyl lunchboxes, they found that 1 in 5 contained amounts of lead considered unsafe. Several of the lunchboxes had more than 10 times the hazardous lead levels, but that's not what they told the public. In fact, the Consumer Product Safety Commission released a statement that said they had found, quote, no instances of hazardous levels, end quote. And they refused to release their actual test results, citing what are called regulations that protect manufacturers from having that sort of information leaked or released to the public. You see, protecting manufacturers, these bastards, the job of these agencies is to protect consumers. But I digress. This is at CNN.com, by the way. The data was not made public until the Associated Press received a box of about 1,500 pages of lab reports, in-house emails, and other records in response to an FOIA request filed about a year ago. Now, the documents describe two types of tests. Keep in mind, this is on your child's lunch box, if your child carries a lunch box. My son Chris, who's now 28, carried a lunch box every day he went to school. I don't know what the hell we're going to do. What are we going to do about Molly? Wrap it up in a paper sack, I guess.
I think we should just starve her. Like Anna Nicole, I want to have a sexy baby.
Probably would be safer. So anyway, the documents reveal two types of tests. Even though the Consumer Product Safety Commission wouldn't release the test results because they have to protect the industry. Jesus God. Two types of tests on these lunchboxes. One involves cutting a chunk of vinyl off the little lunchbox, dissolving it, and then analyzing how much lead is in that solution. The second test involves swiping the surface of one of these lunchboxes and then determining how much lead has rubbed off. God. The results of the first type of test, looking for the actual lead content of the vinyl, showed that 20% of the bags had more than 600 parts per million of lead. More than. Now, that's considered the federal safe level, 600 parts per million. The highest level was 9,600 parts per million. But the Consumer Product Safety Commission did not use those results. A spokeswoman for CPSC, one Julie Velisi, more from her in a moment, she said, quote, "When it comes to a lunchbox, it's carried. The food that you put in the lunchbox may have an outer wrapping, a baggie, so there isn't direct exposure. The direct exposure would be if kids were putting their lunchboxes in their mouths, which isn't a common way for children to interact with their lunchbox." End quote. This is what the Consumer Product Safety Commission spokeswoman, Julie Velisi, snotty, nasty-ass comment like that.
Well, you know, they'd have to put it in their mouth, and that usually isn't what children do.
So, the Consumer Product Safety Commission focused exclusively on the second test. How much lead came off the surface of one of these lunch boxes when lab workers swiped them with what sort of solution on the cloth or the cotton? I have no idea. For the swipe test, obviously the results were lower, especially after the researchers changed their testing protocol. After a handful of tests, they increased the number of times they swiped each bag again and again on the same spot, resulting in lower average results. See, they kept going over the same spot and writing down how much lead they got. Well, by the 40th swipe, they were probably getting zero, so they would factor that in. Oh, this is what the Bush administration does. There's no place to run, no place to hide from these sons of bitches. It doesn't matter if it's domestic policy, foreign policy, war policy, or your child's lunchbox. An in-house email from the director of the Consumer Product Safety Commission's chemistry division explained that they had been retesting with the new protocol, the one where they just swiped it, which gave a lower average result than the prior report. He said, quote, "This shows that the overall risk is lower than our original testing would have showed, as the amount of lead dislodgeable is mostly taken out with the first wipe and goes down with subsequent wipes, end quote. Don't you feel like you want to kill something right now? Now, Ms. Valisi, the spokeswoman for the Consumer Product Safety Commission, explained it this way, quote, "The more you wipe, the less lead you actually find. With fewer wipes, we got a higher detection of lead presence. We thought more wipes was closer to reflecting how you would interact with your lunchbox. It was more realistic." End quote. Don't you want to smash something right now, huh? The test results also show that many lunchboxes were tested only on the outside, which is unlikely to be in contact with food. Ms. Valisi said this was because children handle their lunchboxes from the outside. Well, there's more here, and I've got to finish this, and then I'll smash something. Stick around. I'm Mike Malone.
If you're tired of people dying, come on. If you're tired of the fighting, come on. No more wars, no more lying, come on. No more people in the world, come on. Every boy, every girl, come on. If you know it ain't over till God says that it's over, come on. Come on, let's go.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Woo. 21 past the hour. Okay, back to this this story about lead. This just I don't know. It makes me mad. I don't mean mad angry. I mean mad, like killer insane. You know what I'm saying? They tested lunchboxes. Kids' lunchboxes, the soft vinyl types that so many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of American families use to send their, you know, their little darlings off to school with a sandwich and some cookies wrapped up inside, right? Turns out that, according to their own tests, at least 20% of these things have toxic levels of lead. So rather than report honestly the test, the Consumer Product Safety Commission released a statement saying it had found no instances. Now, I mean, what part of no instances is open for interpretation? None of it. No instances of hazardous levels. And some of the levels were 9,600 parts per million, which is more than 16 times an already monstrously sick federal level that's allowable. They allow 600 parts per million of lead in a substance to be near your child. No amount of lead is safe. Zero parts per million is safe. Anyway, the spokeswoman for the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Julie Valisi, or Valise, has just been a real snot about this whole thing. Anyway, as a result of these tests, the Consumer Product Safety Commission issued a public statement last year, deliberately lying and deliberately reassuring consumers they had nothing to worry about. The statement said, quote, "Based on the extremely low levels of lead found in our tests, in most cases, children would have to rub their lunchbox and then lick their hands more than 600 times every day for about 15 to 30 days in order for the lunchbox to present a health hazard," end quote. Now, it's not just Julie Valise who's getting snotty about it. Now that the entire division, the entire Consumer Product Safety Commission, is getting snotty. Oh, is that what your kid does? Huh? Does your kid sit around and lick his box? Huh? Ms. Valise said the commission stands by that statement. But The results of the tests were a little bit disconcerting to expert scientists who reviewed the results for the Associated Press. Alexa Engelman, a researcher at the Oakland, California-based Center for Environmental Health, which has filed a series of legal complaints about lead in lunchboxes, said, quote, they found levels that we consider very high, end quote. She also said, quote, they knew this all along, and they didn't take action on it. It's upsetting to me. Why are we as a country protecting the companies? We should be protecting the kids. Oh, my God. End quote. Henry Waxman, representative, California Democrat, quote, I am concerned that the Consumer Product Safety Commission has failed to protect children from an unnecessary hazard they have known about for some time. We should protect our children by banning lead in all children's products. End quote. I mean, it goes on and on and on, this article. You can find it at CNN.com. Lead, you see, is a stabilizing agent in vinyl. There was a statement here from a spokesman. Oh, yeah, Alan Blakely, a spokesman for the Vinyl Institute. Yeah, there is such a thing. Said his organization defers to the regulatory agencies. In other words, he's willing to be a rotten son of a bitch and allow the Consumer Product Safety Commission to lie. He says, quote, the CPSC was pretty clear that they did not see a danger in these lunchboxes. Basically, we have not seen any indication of actual harm from lunchboxes, end quote. We haven't seen any harm. That's like these dumb bastards who say, global warming, Jesus Christ, it snowed all last week. It's freezing. People that can't tell the difference between weather and climate. I'm so sick of this. I am so sick of it. Aren't you? Aren't you? Huh? Lead is a stabilizing agent in vinyl. But there are other chemicals that can be used instead of lead. Oh, by the way, almost every lunchbox found with lead in the vinyl lining was made in China! Oh, and by the way, Walmart decided to stop selling the soft lunchboxes with vinyl liners after waiting and waiting and waiting and offered refunds to consumers. A store official in a written statement last summer said, quote, the safety of our customers is always a top priority for Walmart, end quote. Lead in our kids' lunchboxes. Okay, now, during this break, with the microphone off, I'm going to smash something.
More spacious skies, now those skies are threatening.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working.
It's 26 before the hour. Now, I said I wasn't going to mention the quote from Uri Dan's posthumous biography of R.L. Sharon. Uri Dan is referred to as a legendary Israeli reporter. He's got a book, R.L. Sharon, An Intimate Portrait, and also contains a couple of revealing portraits of the decider. Now, this is published in Haaretz, but, you know, this is the United States, and we're not allowed to say things like this. It's also at Max Blumenthal's website, maxblumenthal.com. It says here, I'll try, what the hell, if it's too bad, Ian will just bleep us out. This is in Haaretz, this is right in the book review, in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Uri Dan's book. And the reviewer writes, speaking of George Bush, with whom Sharon developed a very close relationship, Uri Dan recalls that Sharon's delicacy made him reluctant to repeat what the president had told him when they discussed Osama bin Laden. Finally, he relented, Sharon did. And here is what the leader of the Western world, valiant warrior in the battle of cultures, promised to do to bin Laden if he caught him. Quote, I will blank him in the blank. End quote. Now,
spank him on the bottom?
Spank him on the bottom? You're close.
Shoot him in the foot?
No. Go back to the bottom. I will blank him in the blank. Oh, my God. This guy is... Is there anyone left on Earth who doesn't understand that Bush is a psychopathic freak? Yeah. Ted Haggard is still heterosexual. I know. Two emails and then to your phone calls. Let's see. Referring to McCain as unctuous and self-righteous, Kate writes, you don't find that attractive? McCave, as Sam Cedar calls him, is a toad, a toady, and a pathetic, cruel, and broken person. That he is from Arizona is sad, because it's a beautiful country. Talk about a Manchurian candidate. I hope his career implodes before he can hurt us anymore, or any more of us. By the way, I put the cheerless leader's latest words of wisdom on a sign on my car. Quote, money trumps peace. GWB 02, 2007. Since the corporate liars aren't bringing up. Did he say that? Money trumps peace? Did he? I think he did. Kate goes on, if I were a science teacher and the pupils asked about haunts and haints and spirits, I would direct them to the world of theoretical physics, 26 dimensions with some warped up inside the others, quarks named truth and beauty, etc., etc., etc. Assign them homework to look for God in there. Really screw with their parents' minds. Pledging virginity? These patriarchs only care about controlling the women. We scare the hell out of these miserable sons of bitches, and with good cause. From Kate. You could also assign, somebody should assign these people, and one of our listeners in Melbourne just sent me an email and suggested Carl Sagan's last book, which I believe he wrote with his wife, Ann Druyan, I believe was her name. And that was the book, The Demon-Haunted World. Last one here from Brian in Austin, Texas. The subject line says, boy virginity pledges. Hey, Mike, maybe the boys could pledge their virginity to their ministers. Or their priests, right? Yeah, there's some more here, but I'll let it pass. Thanks, Brian. Oh, my God. Boy, you go away for a week and everybody just gets crazy. One last thing here. When you hear these Republican pukes telling you that the Democrats don't have a health care plan, yes, we do. Health care is probably one of the most critical issues facing us domestically right now. We've got to do something, folks. We are approaching 50 million at any given time uninsured, and this can't go on. Editorial in the current issue of The Nation, titled, Which Side Are You On? But in the article, it says the Democrats have a plan that's already backed by 78 House members. It's H.R. 676, the National Health Insurance Act, introduced by Representatives John Conyers and Dennis Kucinich. Some 225 labor unions backed the bill, which would expand Medicare to every U.S. resident, a tax on the top 5% of income earners, among other measures, would pay for the program. Too radical? Consider that in September, an ABC News, Kaiser Family Foundation, USA Today survey found that 56% of Americans would prefer a government-run universal health care system, quote, like Medicare, close quote, to our current system. So keep that in mind. H.R. 676, National Health Insurance Act, which would expand Medicare to every U.S. resident. You notice it says resident. There must be a reason it doesn't say citizen. U.S. resident. Lou Dobbs is not going to like that, is he? And among ways to pay for it would be a tax on the top 5% of income earners. You know, I subscribe to the New York Times, and when you're looking through the A section of the paper every morning, it stuns me. They will have a story about the slaughter in Darfur or poverty in India or Katrina victims in this country still struggling to get clean water. And on the same page, down the right side, down the margins, or the left side, you'll see ads for $150,000 necklaces and $7,000 suits and $500 shirts. and then I think to myself, you know, a tax on the top 5% of wage earners in this country to provide universal health care, and how the Republicans, worthless bastards, parasites that they are, would oppose that. And you know what's really sad? The Republicans in the bottom 20% of wage earners would oppose it also, because their preachers would tell them to oppose it, and their representatives would tell them to oppose it, and Rush Limbaugh would tell them to oppose it. It's just astonishing, isn't it? All right. Let's do some phone calls here. Robert is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program. Where's Robert? There he is. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great. It's enough to make a person crazy. Sometimes I worry that I'm cynical, but at the same time, I think that I might not be cynical enough.
Yeah,
apparently. Apparently, during 9/11, Mr. Cheney was head of some anti-terrorism exercise. The U.S. Air Force was running training exercises involving live fly hijackings of commercial airliners and planes crashing into buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Tripod 1 and 2 exercise at the WTC at the same time involving training exercises. FEMA was doing this. And it's kind of interesting that a messaging company owned by an Israeli company in the WTC was found to have a van that was searched by the police, and traces of anthrax and explosives were found in that van. They arrested 200 Israeli spies that day. Their covers was art students. Some of them were explosive experts. Some of them were electronic warfare experts. Besides the alleged 19 Saudis that were involved in this, six of them turned up alive, different places around the world. Their whole story, their whole conspiracy story about 9/11 seems to be falling apart. And on the 23rd in Chandler, Arizona, this month, we're having the 9/11 Accountability Strategies and Solutions conference. Mm-hmm. And if you go to 911accountability.org, you can learn all about it. It's starting on, I think, Friday afternoon, and then goes Saturday and Sunday. And there's been a whole lot of good work done in the last few years. Dennis Kucinich, Representative Kucinich, I spoke with him a few weeks ago, and him and his wife, Elizabeth, are now receiving all information from first responders and anyone who was there that day who've tried to go to the authorities at the top and say, this is what I observed, and they were told, if you know what's good for you, keep your mouth shut. Mm-hmm. All those people now are invited to go to Kucinich.us and unload all the information, the truth about what really happened on that day. And we're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to restore liberty and justice for all.
Well, I definitely hope that happens. If you send me something regarding this this conference, I'll certainly mention it as the time gets closer, okay?
Roger that.
All right. Thanks, thanks for checking in, Robert. I appreciate it. over the weekend, I was reading, where did I read it? I'm drawing a complete blank right now. But the publication that first broke the story about the Israelis across the Hudson high-fiving in New Jersey as they watched the first building get hit, the publication that first published that was the Jewish newspaper, The Forward. And they raised all sorts of questions in their investigation, none of which have been answered. I'll have to. I'll try to remember where I saw that and share it with you, because this is an astonishing article.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. The article I'm referring to is in the current issue of Counterpunch. Excuse me. A friend of mine sent me Coburn and Jeffrey St. Clair's the actual paper itself. I don't know if it's up on their website. What did Israel know in advance of the 9/11 attacks? And it's a stunning article. Fox News Channel correspondent Carl Cameron, I said it was the Jewish Forward that first broke the story. Actually, it was Carl Cameron who reported in a December 2001 series that was the first major expose of allegations of a September 11th related Israeli espionage. Cameron was immediately attacked. He, I don't know how many of you know this, but Carl Cameron was spent an awful lot of time in Iran. As a matter of fact, I think Carl Cameron may have. He was born in America, but Cameron was brought up in Iran because his father was an archaeologist, and. When Cameron first reported this story, he was immediately attacked by several pro-Israel organizations in the United States, and they accused him of being very sympathetic to the Arab side of, I don't know what, in this particular issue, because Cameron had been raised in Iran. But the Jewish Forward, Carl Cameron at Fox News Channel, and a few other people originally raised this issue that our last caller brought up about the so-called Israeli art students. And yes, there were scores of them who were rounded up after the attack on September 11th. And the five who were arrested in New Jersey were... They were being questioned by the local authorities and by the FBI, and all of a sudden orders came from the White House to release them immediately, and they were returned to Israel. I don't see anything in the Counterpunch article about traces of anthrax being found in the van, but the story is bad enough as it stands without adding that. I'm not saying that that isn't part of it. But there were art students, and the van, the so-called white van, was Urban Moving Systems. That was written on the van. It was a white Chevy van. Three individuals were seen celebrating after the impact. And these people were arrested. And when they were stopped by the New Jersey police, they said they were Israelis, and... I don't know. It just goes on and on. I read this the other night and just about lost my supper. It's a Counterpunch. I don't know if it's on the website. If it is, it's counterpunch.org. But this is their subscription. What is it? $2.50 an issue here. But if you want to know what the last caller was talking about, it's at Counterpunch. It was written by Christopher Ketchum, who is... journalist whose work has appeared at Salon.com and Harper's and so on and so forth. It's an aspect of the 9/11 story that has been absolutely buried because it has direct connection to apparently the heart of the story. Not that the Israelis did this, but the Israelis had been tracking these terrorists, a vast spy network of Israeli agents in the United States. I think everybody knows that and accepts it. And for people to say it doesn't exist, I have one word for you, Kenneth Pollard. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. The Israelis have spied against the United States for as long as there has been an Israel, I guess. And why they do it is their business. I don't know. Maybe it's because of the treatment that the Jews got by the United States government during the run-up to and subsequent to the Holocaust. It was horrible. But the Israeli government, for the most part, they don't trust anyone, and perhaps they shouldn't, given real anti-Semitism that exists on the planet. But spying in the United States by the Israelis is as old as spying in Russia by the Americans. I mean, come on, let's not play semantic games. That's like saying that the Israelis don't have nuclear weapons. Come on, stop already. But the gist of the story is that the Israeli Mossad agents, who were working this vast spy network in the United States, knew they were tracking the same people who, according to the official U.S. government story, attacked the United States on September 11, 2001. And that the Israeli Mossad agents had whatever information necessary to have alerted authorities to stop those attacks against us. But the Israelis withheld it. And when the attacks occurred, that was the reason for the high-fiving, was that now, not that they enjoyed seeing 3,000 people go to their deaths, but because now the United States would be forced to stop whatever wishy-washy approach might be in the planning for Israel and come down firmly on the side of the Israeli government, as if the United States hasn't been since 1948. But that's the gist of the story. But the story goes on to explain this vast spy network inside the United States. Now, remember, the bin Laden family, immediately after the attack, when there was a lockdown, there were no flights in this country allowed. How long was it? It was the damnedest thing. You remember, Kathy? I think for a week, you never heard an airplane. And it was eerie. The bin Laden family, on the other hand, the extended family, maybe 50 or 60 people, were gotten out of the country on special flights. Well, these Israelis were gotten out of the country, no matter who wanted to investigate them, CIA, FBI, local authorities, The word came down from the highest possible authorities in the United States, which is Bush and Cheney, to let them go immediately and make sure they got back to Israel safely. So, you pay your money and you make your choice, right? Counterpunch. The article is, what did Israel know in advance of the 9/11 attacks? And what happened to Fox News Channel's Carl Cameron when he tried to report this? Welcome back, 7 past the hour. Okay, one more thing here, and then on to your phone calls. Editorial in the New York Times today, I'm sure some of you saw it. It's very quick. The headline is Making Martial Law Easier, and as one of our correspondents wrote, why is this not on the front page of every newspaper rather than on the editorial page of New York Times? It says, a disturbing recent phenomenon in Washington is that laws that strike to the heart of American democracy have been passed in the dead of night. So it was with a provision quietly tucked into the enormous defense budget bill at the Bush administration's behest that makes it easier for a president to override local control of law enforcement and declare martial law. The provision, signed into law in October, weakens two obscure but important bulwarks of liberty. One is the doctrine that bars military forces, including a federalized National Guard, from engaging in law enforcement. Called posse comitatus, it was enshrined in law after the Civil War to preserve the line between civil government and the military. The other, is the Insurrection Act of 1807, which provides the major exemptions to posse comitatus. It essentially limits a president's use of the military and law enforcement to putting down lawlessness, insurrection, and rebellion, where a state is violating federal law or depriving people of constitutional rights. The newly enacted provisions upset this careful balance. They shift the focus from making sure that federal laws are enforced to restoring public order. Beyond cases of actual insurrection, the president may now use military troops as a domestic police force in response to a natural disaster, a disease outbreak, a terrorist attack, or to any other, quote, condition, end quote. Changes of this magnitude should be made only after a thorough public airing. But these new presidential powers were slipped into the law without hearings or public debate. The president made no mention of the changes when he signed the measure, and neither the White House nor Congress consulted in advance with the nation's governors. There is a bipartisan bill introduced by Senators Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, and Christopher Bond, Republican of Missouri, and backed unanimously by the nation's governors, that would repeal these stealthy revisions. Congress should pass it. If changes of this kind are proposed in the future, they must get a full and open debate. Yeah. So it's incredible what is going on here. Just beneath the radar being this failed news media in the United States that does not report. This was signed into law in October. Is the New York Times aware, and I'm sure it is, that this is February? I do worry sometimes that we have crossed some sort of line that is very calculated and deliberate. The establishment of that line. To say that the U.S. military can now be used against American citizens and law enforcement in the case of natural disaster, insurrection, public disorder, or, quote, other conditions, end quote, is not only an abomination where it concerns the U.S. Constitution, but it's an absolute threat to whatever remains of real freedom in this country, and let's face it, real freedom is kind of restricted in a sense, in compared to what we're used to. Compared to other countries, of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. But slowly, these doors are closing. Slowly, as they said a long time ago, referencing Europe, the lights are going out. And I think that... I think we ought to be paying attention, don't you? Back to your phone call. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Sarge, thanks for holding on. Welcome to the program. Hey, Sarge. Sarge? There he is. Hello, Sarge.
Hey, how you doing, Mike, my friend?
Doing fine.
I'm sorry, man. I had a blood vessel in my ear bust earlier tonight, and it filled my ear up with blood, and it's really sore, so I had my phone on the other ear.
Uh-huh.
Thanks to the military, when those B-52s fired up, and my ears have never been the same since.
I hear you.
Well, I wanted to tell you, I've got a message for you.
All right.
I you got a hanky, because this is going to be kind of, this is going to make you cry.
All right.
You remember the little girl I told you about, the four-year-old that tried to commit suicide and all?
Yes.
Okay. Well, her grandmother, I talked to her this week, Thursday night, and she sent me a message yesterday. She called me on the phone, and she said to tell you that you're telling the story and allowing the story to be told of Jordan, and you can see a picture of Jordan at unreportednews.net,
mm-hmm.
has made a lot of difference, and she just really wants you to know that you are one of her favorite people.
Well, that's very sweet.
And she also said, tell Mr. Malloy that there are other little girls just like Jordan who aren't as lucky as Jordan because they're not getting the help that Jordan is. So we've got a lot of work to do down here. We have one woman who has been one of the really, really major heroes down here. She lives in a FEMA trailer, and it's got black mold in it, and it's horrible. Mm-hmm. Someone broke in her FEMA trailer this weekend. This is the second time in 2 weeks that she's been broken into, and they stole everything, including her food. And she is just in an awful shape. She's one of Jim Yancey's workers.
Mm.
And I'm trying to get a little drive going. Everyone can go to Unreported News and click on the Action Alert. And Jim Yancey and I and Sean Ryan and some of us, we're trying to help raise some money and maybe buy her a safe place for her to live, because these people are actually trying to kill this woman.
Oh, my God.
And so we really need to do this, and I'm going to tell you how important she is. If anything happens to that woman, just go ahead and write down the number 100 for the number of people that's going to die because of her death. Or anything happening to her. That's just how important she is.
Mm.
So, everybody, please help me out here. We've got to do this thing. Also, let me tell you what we saw was... Now, I live in the area, and, you know, I went through Katrina. You know that.
Right.
Okay. And I know how horrible things are. I was shocked at what I saw. What Sean and KPHX people, KNOVM people, saw, Jim Yancey took us around, and what we saw was horrible. In fact, Sean Ryan probably made the best statement. He said, it looks like one of these cities that is an ancient city that has been excavated.
Oh,
it doesn't
God.
Even look real. We got videos and stuff that's going to be posted. We're sending it to Dennis Kucinich. We're sending it to Greg Palace. And anybody else that wants a copy of it, they can see it at unreportednews.net and the KPHX site. And we're trying to get this out. But I'm also got a petition of some kind that I'm fixing to put together, and we're fixing to demand that Haley Barbour either be recalled or, if nothing else, at least pressure him to tell the truth about why he's failing in Katrina, because we're going to present him with evidence and say, tell us the truth, sir, or step aside, because we're not putting up with your lies anymore.
Well, that sounds good to me.
But I tell you, Mike, it's horrible what we saw. Just really, Sean is a veteran of the Chicago Police Department, I think 26, 30 years on the force. And he told me, I've never seen anything in my life like it, Sarge. It just broke my heart.
Hey, hold on a second, Sarge. I'll be right back.
Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for a man.
Your host for a Pience, Brian's future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's
21 past the hour. Back to Sarge, Mississippi. Okay, where were we, Sarge? Let's wrap it up.
Okay, I wanted to say real fast, there is a desire down there to bring a NOBM affiliate. We are talking with a station down there in Pascagoula, right close to the Trent Lott School. And I am looking forward to the day when we have it. And the first night that they have Mike Malloy air on there, I hope to be standing in the parking lot of that school laughing my butt off at Trent Lott, as Mike Malloy says, well, son of a bitch he is. So, hey, they do want the station. The people are mad, and they do like what happened this past week. They are looking at us as their salvation. So, yeah, people, join this Founders Club. We've got to get this in this area. We've got to start supporting NOBM, because this is our salvation, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to leave on that, Mike. Thank you so much, pal. And Jordan said, thank you, sir.
Well, that's very kind. And please tell young Miss Jordan that I said keep smiling. She's a cute little kid.
She's a doll. You should have seen her dance in the ballet for us.
Oh, my
I'm going to let you go, pal.
All right. Thanks, Sarge. Take care. Well, that's sweet. Let's see who's up next. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Matthew, welcome to the program.
I pledge my virginity.
to what?
I don't know. Well, virginity means that you get to have sex a lot, doesn't it?
I'm not sure what it means.
Oh, wait, no. What's that other V word? Virility. Okay, can I start over?
Yeah,
I pledge my virility to, I don't even need a cause. Hey, line up, ladies, please.
That's wishful thinking on your part, Matthew. You're probably still a virgin.
Well, I'm not going to say anything to that. Yeah, it's been one crazy week. I hope you've had a really good chance to relax on your week off.
Well, not really. I mean, the only way you can relax in Bush's America is to utterly and absolutely separate yourself from all forms of communication other than maybe DVDs or music from the 70s and 80s, a period that I wasn't real fond of in terms of the music, with a couple of exceptions. It's hard to escape is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. I don't know if you had said, but where did you go? Was it just
I went away? To a went to a strange and distant land where there were weird creatures roaming about, hanging from things.
Sweet.
I went to visit my children and grandchildren.
Oh well, I mean, at least you get to be with the people you love.
A strange and distant land where people are hanging from things. but the real reason you called, Matthew.
Yes, yes. Earlier this evening, I had gone to a Mid-Cities Texas Democratic meeting, and while they did have some very good points, it's just not really shocking to me. It's just continually disappointing. Not the policy in general, but I mean, what we need, at least around here in where you are too, in fascist nation, are people who can really speak to the populace, not engage in wishful thinking, but more like just getting fire behind their words and showing people that we as leftists, we as liberals, we as human beings mean business, and we're going to really just fight as hard as we can for the cause we believe in. And I'm sure there's plenty of organizations out there that have people who can do that, but especially here in Texas and especially in red states, I think we really need liberal-minded people, we really need people who can speak, who can get out there, who can get the word out there, and who won't take any blankety blank from the radical right.
All right. Well said.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Matthew. Take care. Another break. Okay. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Cheer up, kids. It gets a lot worse.
You're going to have to deal with stress. Deal with stress. Deal with stress. You're going to be a giant mess when you get back from the war.
Santa Claus does not exist, and there's no Easter Bunny. You'll find out when you grow up that Big Bird isn't funny.
Funny. Life's going to suck when you grow up, when you grow up, when you grow up. Life's going to suck when you grow up. It sucks pretty bad right now. You're going to end up smoking crack on your back, face the back. You're going to end up hooked on smack, and then you're going to die.
Hey, Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Molloy.
Before the hour. By the way, if you're not comfortable using PayPal to become a founding member of Nova M, you can mail your subscription. Excuse me. I'll give you the address here. Nova M Radio, 824 East Washington, Phoenix, 85034. I know. Let me give it to you again. Nova M Radio, Founders Club, you can put that in, 824 East Washington, Phoenix, 85034. Do we have that up on our website? There is a link? Okay. Regarding the story in Counterpunch, you can go to Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Online and download the interview, the transcript of the interview. It's two part that she had with Alexander Coburn, the author of the article, Christopher Ketchum, and who else was in that interview. Anyway, Democracy Now! Is a good place to start. Justin Raimondo's antiwar.com website has it. At Amy Goodman's website, Mark Perlman, who is the diplomatic correspondent for The Forward, he's the one who broke the story about the Israeli spies in 2002, the Israeli Spy Network. And again, Mark Perlman, writing for the Jewish Forward, is not, you know, it's not some anti-Semitic site. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, Alexander Coburn, Christopher Ketchum, and Amy Goodman, who happens to be Jewish. It's at democracynow.org, and you can find it, Cheering Movers and Art Student Spies. Now, that's a good site. You can also go to WayneMadsenReport.com, Wayne Madsen, M-A-D-S-E-N, report.com. There's an article there. And then Justin Raimondo's website, antiwar.com. And that is under the headline, the High Fivers. That was just put up a couple of days ago. It is a very, very, very important story. And it's one that has been totally murdered by the American press, including, dear God, The Nation. One of the publications that, first of all, I think it was Salon.com, said they would publish it, and then they killed it. And then The Nation said, let's see, it says here, Ketchum took the story then to a number of other magazines and got nowhere. In the late summer of 2006, he took it to The Nation, whose editors said that, yes, they wanted the story. but wouldn't schedule it until after the crush of political coverage in the run-up to the November elections. The target publication date was December 8th. At the last minute, the nation pulled the piece. And it goes on and on. And they discuss this on Amy Goodman's program, why this story has been killed. And one word in the whole story that makes people as nervous as whores in Sunday school is the word Israel. Remember, it is just not allowed, even at the Nation, in certain instances, even at Salon.com, and certainly not at FoxNews.com, to challenge the Israeli lobby. It's really, really an ugly, terrible situation. There is a story there that needs to be aired out. There's a very good possibility that the worst case scenario is simply, and I use the term simply advisedly, simply that a vast Israeli spy network in the United States had absolute foreknowledge of what was to occur on September 11th and did not share it with the CIA or FBI or NSA or whomever. That's one scenario. Another, and in order for you to believe this, of course, you have to buy into the theory that what occurred on September 11th was the story put out by the official story put out by the U.S. government and media. If you deviate from that story, then it raises all sorts of complicating issues. So it is one of those stories, though, that you and I are not going to live long enough to ever know the truth. I mean, we're just not. This story is being absolutely butchered and buried. But when Carl Cameron at Fox News Channel was, his very livelihood was threatened, Fox News Channel had up on their website a detailed story that Cameron had put together, and eventually it was taken down under pressure from ADL and AIPAC. And when you clicked on the link after it was taken down, a page came up, or a screen came up that said, "This story no longer exists." And the hammer used against Carl Cameron was that even though he was an American, he was brought up, he was raised in Iran, and therefore, for some reason, he would be pro-Arab, which is weird when you stop and think that the Iranians are not Arabs. But anyway, that's usually the way this works. I think anyone who has ever worked in media has felt the pressure. I certainly have. I get pressure even now from listeners who otherwise, I think, enjoy this program or at least find it amusing. But any time I get into even oblique criticism of Israeli foreign policy, especially where it concerns what happened at Sabra and Shatila or what happens in the occupied territories or the fact that Israel does practice a policy of apartheid against the Palestinians, as Jimmy Carter so ably put forward in his book, or spy networks in the United States run by the Israeli Mossad, or Israeli nuclear weapons, or the myth that the Bush administration wants to keep nuclear weapons out of the Middle East, which is an absolute screaming, horrendous, hideous joke that is not funny, since Israel has up to 200 of these weapons. Any time those subjects are broached, it never fails to amaze me. This goes all the way back over my entire career. I remember one time a guy who ran the ADL branch here in Atlanta, who is now dead, I forget his name, but he labeled me an anti-Semite in print in one of the local newspapers because I advocated the logical aspect of the Palestinian cause during the first Intifada back in the 80s. So this is not new to me. I'm not intimidated by it. I frankly don't give a damn because I've been dealing with this for 25 years. But anyone who does not believe that there is a powerful pro-Israel lobby in this country that exercises control over conversation and discussion to a point in hideous excess beyond what one would expect from a foreign government having influence, all foreign governments. I mean, you can't pick up national newspapers without seeing ads for the UAE or Saudi Arabia, huge full-page ads about how wonderful it is in their backward, murderous little Islamic fundamentalist countries. You can't. So to suggest that of all the countries that lobby the United States, that lobby the government, that lobby our legislators, that lobby our business community, that lobby our media, that exert pressure, that somehow Israel can't be discussed when they do it? Oh, give me a goddamn break. I mean, I'm just not going there. And to whatever extent it has tampered with my career, I frankly don't care. I do believe that truth has some value. And I do believe that, the old axiom that the truth will set you free. If you are a listener who happens to be an American Jew and you're offended by what I say, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. Except, piss off. I really don't care what you think, because I am not ever into the realm of anti-Semitism. I am as clear about that in my head as I'm as clear about anything, except to the extent that I'm anti any religion. And anti-Semitism actually means anti-Jewish. It doesn't mean anti-Semitic, it means anti-Jewish. So to the extent that I think all religion is hokum, okay, I'm guilty of talking about your religion too. But as far as Israeli foreign policy being off-limits for discussion on this program, no way. Until such time as this program is, for some reason, would be terminated for doing just that. I think it is horrifying the extent to which the Israeli lobby, and I think a lot of Israeli citizens understand this also. It's horrifying the extent to which the Israeli lobby influences decisions made in this country, whether it is to kill a story, or to remove somebody from the airwaves, or to influence a vote in the House or the Senate. And anyone who says that doesn't happen is either a liar or a fool. It's just astonishing to me. Now, I've tried to understand from an historical perspective why that is the case in this country, why there is such refusal by anyone in mainstream media, for the most part, to criticize Israel. And I've tried to lay out the reasons for that. Historical guilt on the part of the United States, on the part of these fake Christians who realized that they were instrumental in bringing down the Holocaust on the Jews. A desire to see an end to the persecution of the Jews and the pogroms that were directed against them. And kind of a centuries-old anti-Muslim hatred that does exist in this country. It's there. And the nascent anti-Semitism. The problem, see, is that when you start talking about the things I talk about on this program regarding Israel, it does rattle the cages of the real anti-Semites, and they jump on board. And I think that's what the Israeli lobby always fears, that the truth is going to stir up the real anti-Semites. Oh, well, you can find the articles yourself and make your own decision.
Pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground, and I won't back down. I won't back down. Hey,
it's about 9 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix tonight. He also answered your phone calls. Also thanks to our senior correspondent, Chris, in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, and the moderators at MikeMolloy.com on the message board. You ought to go there and sign up. That doesn't cost you anything. But we do want you to go to NovaMradio.com and sign up for downloads and podcasts and a chance to win $10,000, okay? Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. Back to your phone calls. Prez is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Prez, thanks for holding on.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing tonight there, my friend?
Doing fine.
Well, sure, it's glad to hear your voice. It's good to hear you back. The other guys filled in okay, but they weren't anything close to you, and I'm glad you're back.
Well,
no,
thank you.
No hit on them. But
oh, no, I understand.
You know.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. I had a couple of things to mention real quick. I know we don't have too much time here, but you know who the official was? I believe he was a judge or immigration official who allowed the Israelis to go back to Israel. Was Michael Chertoff.
Oh, that's
who
right.
Actually has dual citizenship, or at least he had it at that time.
Right, right.
Among many other people, apparently in the U.S. government, they're actually government officials that have dual citizenship, which I don't even know if that's legal, but of course, what nicety is that to worry about, huh, these days?
Well, there's right? It's not just that. There's so much that is so vile and corrupt by this Bush administration and Cheney and the rest of these people. There's so many things that we're not supposed to talk about, that we're
yep.
supposed to be, no offense to Germans, but we're supposed to be good little Germans and turn our eyes the other way and pretend like what we're seeing is not happening. And,
well, you know,
that's a damn shame.
You're exactly right. And another thing, I'm just reading, I have subscribed to The Nation. I'm kind of upset with them for that and other stories, the way they treated Gore Vidal when he was asked to interview McVeigh by McVeigh, which is a fascinating little interview.
Oh, it is. I've read that. It's unbelievable.
Really, McVeigh was no dummy. And those guys had help. But anyway, there's a book called Crossing the Rubicon by Michael Ruper. You probably
yes, very, very familiar with it.
Well, anyway, he talks extensively about that and also about Northern Vigilance, these two or three operations that were going on that Cheney was running. And there was only four jets available in the whole eastern seaboard, and two of them got sent to 180 miles out to sea for some reason. That's just one of the many, many things. Also, the people you're talking about, the Mossad guys, were working with the guys with explosives in New York City, I believe. And I think they were affiliated with that guy, Mer Kahane, the guy that was arrested in New York there.
If you're referring to, you're not referring to Meir Kahane, are you?
That's who I'm referring to.
Well, no, he was assassinated about 15 years ago.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of some other guy then, apparently. But,
yeah.
But they knew about it. And also the thing about all the put and take, the put orders on American United, we've heard about that. That was never explained. In fact, there's something like several hundred thousand dollars waiting to be picked up profit on one of those deals, and it never has been collected.
Well, I would imagine whoever made the deal is not going to show up. Hey, that's my money. No,
hey,
I don't think so.
Swear, by God.
No, I hear what you're saying. There are so many situations, Prez, regarding what happened on September 11th that you and I simply are not going to know in our lifetimes. We're just not. It doesn't make any difference how many conferences we attend, how many mm-hmm. petitions we sign, how many phone calls we make to our elected officials. We are not going to know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth of September 11, 2001, for generations, if ever. You know, just two words, Kennedy assassination. That's what I have
to
look at. Hey, I have to leave it there. We'll talk again, Prez, all right?
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Keep the faith there, brother.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you checking in. We're just about out of time. I got an email here from Greg in Des Moines. He says, for God's sake, please replace "It'll Make You More Nervous Than a Whore in Sunday School" with "It'll Make You More Nervous Than a Choir Boy Being Disciplined by a Catholic Priest." I guess I offended Greg by talking about being more nervous than a whore in Sunday school. Yeah, you people are crazy tonight. You really are. But, well, you know, what do you expect when, you know, when, what, we, what do we have, 20 seconds left? What does Don Imus do when he has 20? They just pop in an extra commercial, don't they? We don't have an extra commercial yet, do we?
I think they get Mary Madeline to call in.
They get, right, to melt down. check out the story. I mean, just check it out. It's at Counterpunch. It's at Amy Goodman's Democracy Now. It's at Justin Raimondo's website. It's at Wayne Madsden's website. It's all over the place. The Jewish Forward, it's there. Haaretz has written something about it. The Israeli so-called art students and the people who were involved in a vast spy network in this country up to September 11th and what they may have known and what they didn't do about it. It's worth reading. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.